fueled by nicotine, caffeine. My name is Tim.
We have an interview with Guy Kawasaki. My name is Chad.
And I like cookies.
Podcast 91.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast. Podcasting from the MyMac.com studios, it's your hosts, Tim Robertson and Chad Perry.
And as the Kevin Reeves original music theme, written exclusively for us here at MyMac.com's podcast, plays in the background, we're off and running yet again.
Yes, we are. Another great podcast coming your way.
We got a really cool interview. We haven't conducted it yet. We're waiting for a telephone conversation, call, yep, whatever you want to say, from Guy Kawasaki, which is, I think, it's probably going to be pretty cool.
Yep.
If you're a longtime Mac user, you know who he is. If you don't, you're going to learn. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be pretty cool. Unfortunately, it's going to be a cell phone conversation, which audio-wise isn't always the best.
We will do our best to try to make sure we get the best audio quality we can, but as you know, cell phone conversations don't always record very well.
No, and, well, you know, sometimes, actually most of the time, we try to get it done in Skype or iChat. Enhance the audio quality as best we can, but yep, sometimes it's just not possible to do it, you know, on the computer, and you have to use a telephone.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody knows a really cool device that you can hook up to a cell phone, in my case, it's a, what is this? It's a Motorola something. Motorola V710. If you can hook this thing up to a speaker, that would be cool.
Mm-hmm.
That the audio quality would be much better in that case.
I would hope so.
Chad actually pulled out a speaker system that we reviewed a long time ago, mm-hmm, and said, could we hook the cell phone up to this, get better quality? Unfortunately, no. I do have a headphone jack in this thing,
mm-hmm,
but it doesn't do jack.
Right.
I guess if I hooked up a pair of headphones to it, it might work.
Yeah, and we could just set the headphones around the mic, and
yeah,
there we go.
Can you hear me now? Yes. Yeah. But, you know, I got to figure out something because, quite honestly, the cell phone conversations suck quality-wise.
Yeah.
The Gil Emilio one, that actually sounded pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
A couple weeks ago, when we did one, the sound quality I don't think was quite as good.
Yeah.
So he was on a cell phone, we were on a cell phone, mm-hmm, recording on a nice microphone, and it sounded like crap. But
yeah,
that's just the way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, we do have a little bit of Apple news. We'll get to that. And if you're wondering about the segments, you're not going to hear any on this show. We've moved the segments to a My Mac Mini podcast, and that will be released on Friday of this week. So check your iTunes subscription or Yahoo or wherever you get our podcast, and you'll see a new one starting this week.
Yep.
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
It lets us cut down on this podcast a little bit time-wise,
mm-hmm,
and it will give the other people that are doing it, you know, Robert, Nemo, Guy, David,
mm-hmm,
gives them a little bit more breathing room. They don't have to try to cram everything into one, you know,
micro segment.
Yeah, that has to fit the overall theme of whatever we're doing here on this show.
Yeah.
It just makes more sense to do a second podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what I'll do is I'll just kind of introduce each segment on that podcast, but I doubt if I'm going to have much of a role on that podcast because
right,
it's for the other people.
Yep.
Although, you know me, sometimes I'm a glory hound. And there's a microphone! I must tuck into it! You know, I might get a little personal. I'll move up on the mic like this and talk.
No.
No, I don't want to drive people away, do I?
No,
no, that'll
not
scare them away. You know, I was thinking, and this is probably because of the book I'm reading. It's. I don't remember when this book was written. I think it came out right around 1990, but it's basically the history of Rolling Stone magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm learning a lot. And I actually have a little bit more of a, I don't want to say admiration, but
appreciation
for Hunter Thompson.
Yeah.
A little bit more. Simply because he was the start of the whole gonzo journalism type of movement.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have, I don't think, a Mac gonzo journalist anywhere on the web that I could think of. There's just not one person that's just out there doing whatever they're doing. And I think John Farr was that person for a while,
mm-hmm,
but he's not really anymore.
Yeah.
We need someone like that. I wish it could be me. I just don't have the talent. Right. Or the time. Or a combination of the both. I just don't have the time. I wish there was somebody, and I'm always looking for this person, who will electrify. Ronnie O'Lane was kind of that way. Up to he was more controversial than anything. But I don't know. We just need someone like that on the Mac web that really inspires people. They go, wow, this is great. Mm-hmm. They read it and they go, I don't know how this guy does this every week. You know, that sort of writing that's just out there. It's so different. But speaking of writers, we've got quite a few new writers coming into MyMac.com.
Yeah.
It's we're going to introduce them and talk a little bit about them later in the show. But we do want to say right off the bat, this podcast is sponsored by SmallDog.com, Small Dog Electronics. That's where Chad and I picked up our recent purchases, which is for you.
A MacBook.
And I got a MacBook Pro. And I'm really looking forward to the day when I could put maybe an hour together, leave my MacBook on for like an hour, flip it upside down, and fry an egg underneath that sumbitch underneath. Because it gets hot.
Yeah.
It gets too hot. I'm sorry. I'm coming from a 1 gigahertz PowerBook G4 in pristine condition. Love that machine.
Right.
To this machine, this MacBook Pro dual core 2 gigahertz Intel chip.
Yep.
And it's too hot.
Mm-hmm.
I know someone, well, you're not supposed to keep it in your lap. It's a laptop.
Where else do
Apple's,
you keep it?
Apple's notification on their website basically saying it's not recommended that you put this in your lap. It's a laptop. Make it cooler.
Yep.
And I don't mean, ooh, that's cool, Fonzie kind of cool. I mean, cool this son of a gun down. It's too hot.
Yep.
I even have something that goes between me and the computer, and it's still too hot. Something's got to give.
Yeah.
We need a third-party vendor to come out with some kind of neoprene cover for the bottom of it that will, you know, take the heat out of the computer, which obviously has to happen, but kick it away from your lap.
Right.
It's just too hot. So, open call for any developer out there. Come up with a product like that. I will review it, give it super high marks if it works, and pimp it on this show and on the website for months. But it has to work. It can't just be some, ooh, this is neat looking, and it kind of works. No, it has to work.
Yeah.
I want a cool lap, and I don't want to go sterile. Actually, maybe that wouldn't be so bad, because ain't no doctor going to snip me down there, and I don't really want any more kids. So, hey, maybe this is a good idea. I should scoot it up a little farther on my lap.
Thanks, Apple.
Thank you, Apple. The MacBook Pro, sterilizing males since 2006. I don't think we're going to hear that one anytime soon.
No.
I did update this to 1.5 gigabytes of RAM.
Yeah.
Runs a lot faster with a gig and a half of RAM.
Oh, I'm sure it does.
Pretty easy to upgrade it. I don't like the fact there's this little plate. You take out the battery.
Yep.
It's got two little latches. You slide the battery out.
Yep.
There's this little plate that hides where the RAM slot is. It's three screws.
That. Yep,
unfortunately, these are tiny, tiny little screws, and they don't stay in the plate. They fall right out.
Really? Yours don't, because mine
the
did.
The MacBook has that little thing where it doesn't come out of the plate.
Right.
They do on the MacBook.
Ooh,
that sucks.
That's a pain.
I dropped one, and it took me like 10 minutes to find it. It's microscopic in size, and, you know, quite honestly, my floor wasn't that clean, so is this it? No, it's a piece of Dorito. You know, so it took me a long time to find it, and I was like, "Arr!" And I knew that the MacBook has it, so, it, you know, the screws don't come all the way out. That, it's stupid. If you're going to use such tiny little screws... you know, make sure we can't lose them.
Yeah.
I wasn't about to put the darn thing back together until I found it. I mean, you know, what's going to happen? Right, I'm taking a drink of Mountain Dew, so fill in the time here for a second.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised they haven't put that feature over there, because it's a pretty simple piece of metal with just screws and a little dimple to keep it from popping out.
Yeah, that's all it is.
And I thought it was a great feature when I had to replace the RAM that was bad in there.
So this is the first time that you've had to do a RAM upgrade on a MacBook.
Yeah.
You've never done it before.
Right.
I'm sure there's some tutorials online, but I know for a fact you didn't go and look them up.
No.
What do you think? How was it upgrading the RAM?
Nice. It's actually much easier to do it on the MacBook than it was on the G3 laptop.
The iBook.
Yeah.
So what was the steps involved?
For the MacBook?
Yeah.
Basically?
No, for the IBM ThinkPad, Chad.
Basically, flip it over, pop out the battery, take out the plate with three screws, and then the RAM basically almost pops out. You flip a little lever to get to the RAM chip you want, it pops it out.
How much RAM did you put in?
Well, they just sent me 256 to swap out with the one that was bad.
Oh, okay.
So, I have RAM coming to upgrade it.
So. Yeah, what are you going to upgrade it to? Or just 2 gigs?
2 gigs. Just
okay.
You can't
use sign language. Sorry. This is an audio show.
I'm going to 2 gigs because that's the most I can go for, and I figure I just get it all done at once.
Yeah, what the hell? I mean, you know, it's the most that you can get. If you can afford it right now,
yeah.
Do it.
Well, you know, I've done the incremental thing, and it always costs you more in the long run anyways.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, you get like, you know...
Unless you want to operate at like 512 mega RAM until... You know, the next version of the MacBook comes out,
yeah.
And that RAM, and then the RAM you want goes down.
Well, John Farr, mm-hmm. From jhfarr.com and mymac.com, has a new MacBook. Actually, surprisingly, it's exactly the same one you have. Which,
yeah.
Imagine that. that he got, and wasn't even expecting it, just showed up his house one day.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it got to his house the same day you got yours.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Impressive.
And just, it's...
Those
just
small
a coincidence.
Dog
yeah, and it came from Small Dog just like yours. What a coincidence. Anyways, he's looking to upgrade his RAM and his,
mm-hmm.
So you might want to, I don't know, post a blog. You have
okay.
blog access, don't you?
I think I do. I mean,
you should post a blog up at my Mac. If you don't, just let me know and I'll just go and turn
yeah.
it on for you. Just post a blog saying how easy it was,
mm-hmm.
and maybe it will inspire other people.
Yeah.
And if you do need to get RAM, we know where to go.
You go to ramjet.com.
They are another sponsor.
Yep.
Yay, Ramjet! Yay, Small Dog!
And they do have a great deal on MacBook RAM.
It is. I got a couple emails from people who went, after the last show I mentioned that I did the Small Dog Electronics, I think it was podcast number 13.
Yeah.
I did an interview there. And that interview went a lot longer than was scheduled to go or
mm-hmm.
was planning to go. And quite a few people listened to that and sent me in some comments. That was cool. That's always
cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, wow, I can't believe you've really been publishing this long. Yeah, this long. It's been a long time. When you figured that it was 1995. Now, in real time, that doesn't sound like it's a long time ago. For me, I mean,
mm-hmm.
1995, when I look at what was popular on TV and the music and all
mm-hmm.
that, doesn't seem like it was that long ago. Of course, 1985 doesn't seem like it was that long ago either.
Yeah.
But, although I will say 1985 is probably a little bit more, stands out in my memory than 95 does.
Yeah.
But anyways, how different the Mac world was then compared to now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I want to talk to with Guy Kawasaki, because
yeah.
he was in the thick of it at the time, and,
he was an Apple Fellow at that time.
Yeah, he was an Apple Fellow, and, he's got such a rich history. I'm looking forward to talking to him, even
yeah.
if it's going to be on a crappy cell phone.
Yeah.
So we don't have any commercials because we're basically talking about our sponsor. So
mm-hmm.
let's talk about the last one that's sponsoring our podcast.
Then let's talk about Innotek.
Innotek has been our service provider for the MyMac.com website for at least 8 years. I'd have to actually look at my records to see how far back it goes.
Yeah.
But you know, they don't just host our website. They host another pretty popular website,
mm-hmm.
MacAddict.com.
Yep, and they've been hosting MacAddict for...
Oh, geez, 4 or 5 years now.
Yeah.
It's been a while. Of course, MacAddict don't get half the attention that we do, of course, you know.
Well, that's true. We have
they're just a crummy little print magazine, and we're a okay, that's not true. But, you know, I took them to task a few times on
yeah.
this podcast, and Nemo set me straight, and that's actually a really good magazine now.
Mm-hmm.
Open mouth, insert foot.
Yeah.
We did the interview with Neil Tichton.
Mm-hmm.
And I checked out the latest edition of MacTech. That is a really good magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks again to Neil for granting us the interview a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
And if you guys haven't subscribed to MacTech magazine yet, you should. And no, they're not a sponsor of this podcast, and they didn't know I was going to say anything about it on this show. But
if you want to get more fluent in using your Mac and understanding how it works, that is a good source to go to.
It is. It's. But I know that they're doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But reading this history of Rolling Stone magazine... And by the way, if you hear the cell phone ring and it changes a little bit, it's because Guy's calling us instead
yeah.
of us calling him. So if that interrupts our flow, we apologize ahead of time. But reading this book about Rolling Stone's history and the cultural phenomenon that magazine was in the mid-70s, well, 1972 and up, basically.
Yeah.
And looking at what's going in print now, what's going on, the...
Mm-hmm.
The decline of printed material
mm-hmm.
as far as subscribers and ad dollars and
yeah.
thickness of a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Is magazines on their last legs, do you think? How many things do you subscribe to? What magazines do you get, if you don't mind sharing that information with the entire planet?
We get Consumer Reports.
Uh-huh. What do you think of Consumer Reports?
I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Do you actually use it to make buying decisions?
Oh, yeah, we usually do. But, you know, at the same time, we haven't needed a major appliance in so stinking long. When we first started out, when we were married, it was very useful because we had a lot of things that we had to buy.
So then, if you say then that you haven't bought a major appliance in a long time, maybe that has something to do with that you got your buying advice from that magazine, you bought the good stuff,
this is true,
and you haven't had to replace it yet.
Yeah, and really their car reviews are, I mean, that's really, I think, what they do best. Their automobile reviews are excellent as far as looking at overall reliability and value of a vehicle as opposed to cost and what are all the pretty gadgets that it has on
right.
it.
I've seen Popular Science around your house.
Yep, got Pop Science. And
do you think, to me, Pop Science, you've lent me a couple of the uh-huh. older issues and I've looked through them. It always seems dated to me when I'm looking at it. I'm thinking, I just read something about this that had more up-to-date information online.
Yeah, Engadget is usually way ahead of them as far as technology goes.
Yeah.
There's some fun things that they have in there, but it's really more of like a, it's kind of a people magazine for science geeks.
Yeah, I think they probably need to focus more on stories, kind of like Wired does. Now, I subscribe to Wired,
mm-hmm.
and far and away, that's one of the very best magazines out there, as far as I'm concerned, obviously.
Yeah.
And I always read Wired cover to cover, and I always get something useful out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, it's hard to pin down what they are, I mean.
Yeah.
Did you know that Wired.com wasn't owned by them
Mm-mm.
all these years? No, they wasn't. It was two separate entities. They finally bought it back. They have Wired.com is now part of Wired Magazine, which is just bizarre. I had no idea that they weren't owned by the same company. We should probably pause this real quick because our guest is going to call in, and I hate to be right in the middle of something and have it, you know, interrupted, and everybody's like, oh, that was a great conversation, and it sucks because now the phone call is coming in, and they're not going to pick it up. Again, this is probably going to be a lot shorter podcast than we're used to recording, unless the interview with Guy is just going fabulously well and we just keep it rolling. You never know.
That's true.
So we'll be back with Guy and we'll get to the Apple news. It's really only two stories. Actually, you know what? Let's just do it right now.
Okay.
We don't have time. Let's go ahead and take a break.
Okay.
Go out and get some of that needed nicotine that I was talking about at the top of the show. Mm-hmm. I'm already getting my fill of
caffeine,
so I got to supplement with the nicotine and the burning apple in my lap.
5,281 podcasts. Podcast Alley. Podcastpromos.com. Podshow. Podfinder Podcast. iTunes. Where are your listeners going to find your podcast? In all the clutter, get noticed. Now stand out. My name is Adam Raymer, and I own Madtown Aces Audio Productions. We want to produce your podcast promo. Many big-name podcasters have solicited promos for play on their shows. What's more likely to get played?
This is Billy Bob. Listen to my podcast.
Or this.
Podcasting to the world, it's Johnny Sonic, the Digital Experience Podcast. Podcasting from the Red Boy World Headquarters.
Typical PC user. Help for the rest of us. Even if you want to use your own voice, we can make you sound more like you. Contact me personally now for your free consultation on the web at madtownaces.com or by email madtownaces@gmail.com. Madtown Aces Audio Productions, providing quality audio imaging solutions for the podcast community since the dawn of podcasting. Madtown Aces Productions. Podcasts like you mean it.
If you're a recent graduate to the world of Macintosh computing, then the name Guy Kawasaki may not hold any meaning to you. If, however, you've been a long-time Mac user like I have, then you know all about Mr. Kawasaki, and you're about to learn more.
He is a former Apple Fellow, Apple CEO, CEO of Asus, and wrote for such magazines as Macworld, Mac User, and Forbes.
He is the author of The Art of the Start, a must-read for any aspiring entrepreneur.
He was a co-founder of Fog City Software and currently managing director of the startup firm Garage, an angel investor firm for high-tech companies.
Perhaps most famously remembered by some older Mac users, he was the man behind the Macway Evangelist, an email list every Mac user was subscribed to in the mid-1990s.
This is actually Mr. Kawasaki's second interview with MyMac.com, the first conducted by editor Russ Walkowicz in April 1996. And we're here with Guy Kawasaki. Hi, Guy. How you doing?
Fine, thank you.
So you're running Garage.com, but you've got such a rich history in the tech world. It's amazing that someone that's been in the technology business as long as you have is still around. Most people get burned out. What keeps you going?
Or you die, right? What keeps me going is that I love gadgets. I love computers. I love phones. You know, I tend to switch every 6 months. And I've been very fortunate to be affiliated with some world-class products and some world-class companies. I think it's now my role to catalyze the next generation of world-class companies and products. As a venture capitalist during the day through funding, as a blogger and author at night, and as a speaker sometimes during the day and sometimes during the night, to educate and inform and inspire people to change the world.
What drives you to want to inspire new generations of technology creators and business owners?
Well, it depends what time of day you're asking. During the day, you can make the case as a venture capitalist, what's driving me is the desire to make money for my fund. At night, and when I'm speaking, I really think it's all about, you know, paying back the world, paying back society. And it is a very satisfying thing to help people start up great companies. Whether you make money or not, satisfaction can be paid in many currencies, not simply limited to money.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I was pointing at my podcast partner there, and he wasn't paying attention to me. So what's the most exciting company in technology that you see out there that you don't have a direct relationship with? Who's out there doing something that you go, wow, that's fantastic?
That's a good question. YouTube is a very interesting company for me. I think it's fascinating how they've grown so fast.
Yeah, but isn't there a whole lack of revenue model that kind of needs to be addressed there?
You know, revenue is overrated. and still, to this day, many of the things that Google's doing is very interesting, like Google Video. We're investors in some very interesting companies like FilmLoop, which, you know, is obviously a conflict of interest, but it's an interesting question. You know, when I blog about or speak about companies, the question is, which came first? Did I make the investment and therefore talk about the company, or did I like the company, therefore make the investment and therefore talk about it? And it's the latter. It's a form of Guy's Golden Touch. So Guy's Golden Touch is not whatever I touch turns to gold. Guy's Golden Touch is whatever is gold Guy touches.
How much is that, you think, is know-how or just a gut instinct on your part, being, you know, into technology as long as you have been?
Well, I tell you something. By no means am I infallible. I just happen to fall in love with things. And when I fall in love with things, you know, one reaction is to invest. Another reaction is to publicize, just for the sheer pleasure of helping these companies.
Now, I got a question, a personal question. I read your blog quite often. I get a lot out of it, to be quite honest. But how the heck did you get a free Saab?
Free Saab? I never got a free Saab.
Wasn't it a Saab?
I got an Audi.
Audi, that's what it was, yes. I didn't have it up in front of me, but for some reason, Saab was
there. It's not free in the sense they keep. That's my phone.
Oh, no.
1 second. I will get rid of this call. Maybe it's Saab giving me a call. Did you hear my CTU telephone ringtone? It took me 2 hours to get that to work on that phone, so I hope you heard it. So anyway, how did I get the car?
Yeah.
It was a loan. Well, it was a loan car. They wanted me to try it and, you know, see if I liked it. I've subsequently given it back, and now I have a Honda Fit, and I'm going to blog about that any day now. And then after that, I'll see what kind of car I can get the next time. So I happen to love cars, and you know, if you can convince a car manufacturer or a dealer owner that a blog entry about a car would be very useful, then you know, you'd be amazed what they can come up with.
Wow.
I have not yet broken the Porsche, Ferrari, Maserati segment yet, though. You'll be among the first to know if I get one of those.
Well, let me interrupt you here and say this segment of the podcast is sponsored by Chevrolet Corvette. We'll see if that helps any. You know, I don't want to go with the whole Porsche route. I want to keep it within, you know, actually something that could happen. And yeah, they could throw a Corvette our way, we wouldn't complain. So How long?
I don't care if they throw it your way. I care if they throw it my way.
Yeah, I know, but this is our show. So. So what led you to blogging? I mean, you kind of disappeared off the map for a lot of people for a number of years, and then you pop up blogging, and it's like you never left.
Well, I'm a very late comer to blogging. I started blogging the first day of this year. And for a long time, I just thought that blogs was just too inherently arrogant, even for me. because, you know, one of the things about blogging is you are saying to people, my opinion of whatever is so important that you will want to read it.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't characterize myself as humble, but even I could not get past that. So I've refined my opinion that there are three kinds of blogs. There's a blog that is a news bot that constantly puts out the daily, you know, feed about what's the latest gadget, the latest company. There are rants and raves, and this is more in the category of what I want to avoid, which is, you know, I'm so important when I write about something that I hate, you should read it. And the third category is the category I aspire to, which is being an essayist. And the topic of my essays is primarily marketing, sales, evangelism, and entrepreneurship. Now, I don't know about other bloggers, but when you read a blog entry of mine, right now, there's one out there about The Long Tail by Chris Anderson,
yes.
His new book. I wrote one about a woman possibly writing the works attributed to Shakespeare.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Yeah.
So when I write a blog like that, believe it or not, those kinds of things take 5 or 6 hours to write.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, and, you know, taking 5 to 6 hours to write a blog entry, that doesn't scale. So I cannot do it every day. So I intersperse things. You know, sometimes I find listings and I want to point to other people and all that. But when I truly write an essay, even I have a series of 10 questions with. Even those, you would think that, well, you put out the questions, you get the answers, then it's done. Even those take 4 or 5 hours to finish. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to establish a blog that has the highest signal-to-noise ratio on the Internet. Hence, you know, the subtitle of my blog is Signal Sine Tinnitus, which is, you know, Latin for roughly signal without noise.
Interesting. Looking back on your history and technology and everything that you've done, excluding what you're doing now and Garage and your blog, what's the most fun that you had working with a technology company? Which company and what did you do there?
Well, by far the answer is Apple Computer. I mean, that's a hard act to follow. So I can't tell you that anything has been close to working with Apple Computer, because that, you know, we have great technology and we change the world. How often can you say that?
Yeah.
And in any person's life, if you can come across one Apple Computer, you've done well.
Now, you famously, at least for people of my generation of Mac users that were around in the 90s and going forward, famously, you were known for the MacWay Evangelist. How did that get started, and what do you think that did for Apple?
Well, first of all, Mary, you want to bring your listenership up to speed. The Evangelist was a list server that had about 44,000 subscribers. It was put out by me during a time when there was pretty much only bad news about Apple in all forms of journalism. So I thought, since, you know, we can't exactly convince journalists to write positive things, I would just become a journalist. So this was in 1995, 1996, 1997, you know, that time frame. So one could make the case that it's not that I'm late to blogging. I was very early to blogging. I had a blogging with an RSS feed of 44,000 people.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Right? So I was ahead of my time, and then I took a vacation. So the purpose of that was to maintain the Macintosh cult, essentially.
Yeah. I know a lot of Mac users got a bad reputation at the time, and that's kind of when the whole cult thing started, that when Guy would post an article to the list that said, hey, here's a review of a product, or here's a news item that's unfair to Mac or Apple, the people of your list would literally bombard that reader. I know after a while you tried to curtail that, but I have to give you the credit for coming up with the whole concept of, I don't know, the cult of Mac. That really started with you.
Well, I mean, yes and no. A lot of people say that I was the first evangelist, too. They kind of forget about Jesus. But, you know, the cult of Mac was very much in existence since roughly January 24th, 1984. Now, I happen to be a high priest in the cult of Mac, but I certainly was not God.
But you got to admit.
Maybe I invented both blogging and spamming at the same time.
You got to admit, though, at the time that you were running the Macway Evangelist, you were the most public figure and probably the most popular figure in the Apple world, including the CEO and anybody else at Apple themselves.
Well, I mean, that is probably true. But it's probably true because Steve had not yet returned. And I have to tell you, I am quite flattered to this day that whenever there's polls about, you know, the most famous, most well-known, most important Macintosh / Apple, whatever, it's usually Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, and Guy Kawasaki.
Yeah, I would definitely say that that's an accurate list myself.
You know, I am living proof that if you do one thing right in your life, you can live off your reputation for 20, 30 years.
What, I take it then you still use an Apple Macintosh?
Yeah, I'm using a MacBook Pro as we speak. I'm looking at it right now.
What's your favorite application to use on that Mac?
Well, favorite is a tricky word. Let me tell you what I use.
Okay.
It's easier to describe it that way because I don't have a favorite. It depends on what I do. So for email, my life and much of my life revolves around email is Entourage. Mm-hmm. I use Entourage for that. I use both Safari and Firefox for browsing. The reason why I don't use only one is because some of my online banking stuff requires, you know, one and not the other.
Yeah.
For writing my blog, I set off into a search for a good WYSIWYG HTML editor, and I will tell you that that product does not exist. And so what I do is I draft with BBEdit, and then I post with something called MarsEdit.
Yeah.
So I use two products to post. I also put a picture in every posting, and that picture is typically obtained by iStock Photo, where I can buy pictures for a buck each. Then I use a piece of shareware called Image Scale to scale it down from its, you know, 800 by 600 size to 125 by, you know, 187 or whatever it is. I use NetNewsWire for all my RSS feeds. I also use Yojimbo to store all my things like receipts and passwords because I can never find those things whenever I need them.
Yes.
And, see, I'm looking along the bar here. I have used Parallels because sometimes I need to run a Windows application. I think Parallels works very well.
Just remember to wash your hands afterwards.
Yeah. And yesterday I bought a copy of the Missing Sync for Windows Mobile, which allows me to sync my Macintosh with my Windows Mobile Motorola Q phone.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's kind of my world.
Now, coming from such a prestigious history with Apple and Mac users in general, what do you see as the biggest difference between what's going on in the Mac world today and, say, 95 or even 85?
Well, I think that it's interesting that today, you really don't have to sort of justify that Apple might survive to people. And there was a long period where you did. And there's two factors that cause that. One, I mean, not having to do it anymore. Two factors that cause that. One factor is that with the internet, you know, you're just a lot less application specific, and so you don't really, you're not really sending Word documents around anymore. You're downloading PDFs or you're reading websites, right? And so the platform you're on in a internet world is a lot less important. So that's one factor. And the second factor is, praise God, you know, iPod has been so successful for Apple that, you know, nobody thinks that Apple's going to go away because it has iPod, iTunes, and Macintosh.
Yeah.
So this world is a lot easier. You don't have to justify that the computer you're buying, the company that makes the computer you're buying or the music player that you're buying is going to disappear.
Father, husband, venture capitalist, author, blogger, what's in your future?
In a perfect world, I would just blog and speak. And, well, I mean, obviously, and be father and husband. But that's what I would like to do, blog and speak, father, husband, and play hockey.
And play hockey.
That's I love to play hockey.
That's amazing coming from someone who grew up in Hawaii, correct?
Yeah, it is sort of odd. It would be like someone who grew up in Alberta loving surfing. I took it up because my kids took it up, and you know, from the first moment I stepped on the ice, I loved it. Tonight, for example, I'm participating in an adult hockey tournament in Santa Rosa, California, which is about 2 hours from where I live. And the game starts, if it's on time, which is doubtful, the game starts at 12:45 a.m.
Wow.
So,
well, that's commitment on your part, definitely. That's
this is not like golf where you go on a Sunday afternoon.
No. I personally want to thank you for all your efforts to help keep the Macintosh platform alive and viable during the dark days of Apple, and we really appreciate you coming on for this interview today, and we want to wish you the very best in all your future endeavors.
Thank you. My best to you guys and all the Mac users out there, too.
Thank you, Guy.
Thanks, Guy.
Bye-bye.
Variant Frequencies, your speculative fiction dial. Find us at www.variantfrequencies.com. Variant Frequencies is a podcast that stretches the entire bandwidth of genre fiction, modulated by a constant element of the fantastic. Every month, we give you a new story produced and performed by Rick Stringer, as well as guest dramatic readers, and written by our Variant Frequencies staff. Matt Wallace will navigate worlds where techno-noir meets visceral horror, bring you dystopian visions of the past, present, and future. Space adventure, tough guys of every stripe, and a little sex and violence just to keep things interesting. Ann Stringer explores everyday life from a not-so-everyday angle, stretches time and its limits, and creates heroines whose wit and familiarity draw you into worlds you may not know, but might just recognize. Our goal at Variant Frequencies is to entertain and expose you to our work, and we work hard on every story you will hear. So tune in, turn the volume up, and let some of our weird carrier waves distort your reality. For just a little while.
And it's a pretty slow week for Mac news, so we've only got a couple, news items, I guess you'd say.
Sure.
The first one is, Apple reports today a profit of $472 million, and yet we're still looking for them to sponsor us and not returning our phone calls.
Oh, well. Apple today announced financial results for its fiscal 2006 third quarter, ended July 1st, 2006. The company posted revenue of US $4.37 billion and a net quarterly profit of $472 million, or a 54 cent per diluted share. These results compare to revenue of $3.52 billion and a net profit of $320 million, or 37 cents per diluted share in the year-ago quarter. Gross margin was 30.3%, up from 29.7% in the year-ago quarter,
Apple shipped 1,327,000 Macs and 8,111 iPods during the quarter. Wow.
That represents a 12% growth in Macs and 32% growth in iPods over a year ago.
That's very huge numbers. So.
Most impressive.
Most impressive indeed. Business Week has an article up called iPod Accessories Gone Wild. It's kind of an interesting article.
Yeah. The article takes a look at some of the, shall we say, outlandish iPod accessories on the market today. These include a stereo dock for iPod with bath tissue holder.
An iPod shoulder bag.
CEO card wallet for iPod Nano.
Bulletproof iPod case, which is, of course, important.
The iPod Nano thong.
Which Chad has one on right now. An iPod Nano belt.
A Star Trek triple-like iPod case.
A mobile security lock for iPod.
iSticky Pad XL.
And gloves with PlayPoint technology for iPod click wheel.
What the heck?
I've been saying for a long time it's really the accessories market that's making the iPod as successful as it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a huge, diverse group of weird products that...
Oh, yeah.
You know, show me another product that has that kind of... A thong. Not even the Mac has a thong case. You know. Of course, if you could wear an iPod thong, you'd probably be kind of big. Yeah. some really cool stuff going on at MyMac.com. Obviously, we have some new writers.
Yep.
And newer writers have yet to appear. Robert Hazelrig has been on the podcast for about a month now, and his first article is up at MyMac.com.
Yes, it is.
So that's pretty exciting, and I'm looking forward to seeing what else Robert's going to come up with in the future.
And his first article is called, Can the Argo Kill the iPod?
The Argo is probably an internal code name for Microsoft. It's their iPod killer. Will it work? Well, read Robert's article and find out. The next one is Vern Seward. He hasn't actually posted anything on our site. Most people, if you read the Mac Observer, will recognize the name.
Yeah.
Vern is a regular contributor to the Mac Observer and will be writing at mymac.com as well. And a friend of John Nemo's, he's been a guest reviewer in the past, has joined us as well. Artie. How do you pronounce that last name, Chad? It's right there.
Allenkoff. Artie Allenkoff.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, John did an interview with Artie. And it will be on the My Mac Mini podcast this Friday.
Really?
Yeah.
And what do you interview Artie about?
Well, you have to listen to that podcast to find out.
No! Oh!
We've got one more new writer, and this was actually finalized yesterday. His name's Tom Schmidt. He's going to be writing a help article. In other words, if you have a problem with your Mac or software, Artie's going to be able to help you out.
Cool.
Just send him your questions.
Tom's going to be able to
Tom,
help you.
What, I said Arnie, didn't
I? You said Artie.
Yeah, and Tom is at tom@mymac.com. Send him your Mac questions. And he's an Apple certified technician. He's really going to be able to help people out. And, you know, he's going to get up and rolling real soon here. I think his first question that he's got is about Apple Works, and he's going to be posting a column here in the very near future. So that's going to be something neat to have up on the website. We've already got Donnie Yanklow doing the how-tos. Now we're going to have Tom doing the this is what happens when something breaks.
Yeah.
Excellent. So I'm really, really pleased with that. Of course, we have a lot of new content up on the website right now. I posted what I think, anyways, is a very interesting article from Mazen Alighieri, Tech Pirates in Saudi Arabia.
Yep.
Oh, such an eye-opening piece.
It really is.
I had no idea piracy was...
so prevalent.
Yeah, I mean, it's worse than I thought it was.
Yeah.
And it's a mindset, you know? Not everybody is the same around the entire world. I mean, people are very different. I do want to say, I know Mazen was, he does a lot of traveling. Recently, he was in Beirut. Very glad right now that he's not in Beirut.
Yeah, definitely.
With what's going on in the Middle East and between Israel. And thank goodness he's not in that. I'd be worried about the guy if he was there right now. I mean, for good reason, I think. We've got another review from Donnie Yankelo on Lifeline Forum. It's kind of Illustrator Lite. Type of program. If you're into artwork and you're looking for a vector program, this might be right up your alley.
And it's only $79.
John Martellaro, who also has been a longtime Mac writer and worked at Apple for a while, he also writes at the Mac Observer. We kind of got this whole Mac Observer thing going lately, don't we?
Yeah.
We have no formal relationship with them, but I like Brian over there, their publisher, and I think they have a really... they're more news than we are. In fact, we're not news at all.
Yeah, by the way, we have an interview with Vern coming up, don't we?
Yes, actually, we do have an interview with Vern. Is that next week or the week after?
Week after, I believe. Yeah,
yeah, that's going to be interesting. Hopefully, we'll have his first article up on the site before.
Yeah.
If not, that'll be kind of a good introduction to Vern. I forgot about them. Glad you. Anyways, John Martelloro has a article called "Tools and Techniques for Managing Safari Bookmarks." Yep. Safari really doesn't do a very good job of managing your bookmarks, and this is going to be an article that you're going to want to check out. Maybe there's going to be a tip in there, or a way, or a program to manage your Safari bookmarks a little bit more intelligently.
And we've got a couple of contributions from Donnie again. We've got Maxpiration 44, iDisk Explained.
In a new feature called Teach Me My Mac, and it's a video. It's about a minute long. If you subscribe to this podcast, you already have it.
Yep.
It downloaded to your iTunes a couple days ago. And he just basically shows you with screen capture and a voiceover how to do things on your Mac. So it's just really fantastic. Mazin also has a Finding the Perfect PIM, a personal information manager software.
Yep.
And going farther back, we go back to My Mac Podcast number 90, and that was last week, so we can stop there. There's a lot of cool stuff up on the blog side. You know, I had this great idea called John Lennon Would Have Been a Blogger. It was this grand article that I had in me, and I've been thinking about for a while. And I finally sat down to put it to sleep, and it just came out like crap. I couldn't close the deal.
Really?
Yeah, it was like I was 16-year-old with a woman for the first time, and I just couldn't close the deal.
Mm.
It just came out horrible. And it really kind of ticked me off, because it was going to be just this. I had so many grand ideas for this.
This earth-shattering.
It was going to, people
linked on dig.
They would have said, wow, this is writing. He's absolutely right. Lennon would have been a blogger. This is fantastic. And it, nothing. It came out horrible, and I still posted it because I'm a press whore.
Yeah.
But it's crap. It could have been so much more, and I don't know. There's sometimes you have a great article in you, and you sit down, and it cannot find its way from your cerebral cortex to the tips of your fingers and onto your keyboard. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Had I started it when I first started thinking about it, and this is a tip for any aspiring writer, by the way, if I would have simply put notes down, taking just a few moments, every time I had an idea that I wanted to incorporate into this grand article that I was planning in my head, it would have been much easier to write.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do that. I just sat down and thought, I'm going to write this article now, and it didn't come out quite as grand as I had envisioned.
Yep. I think we've all had the experience, though, when we've written. I've looked at reviews that I've done and thought, God, I could have thought of this, I could have thought of that, I could have looked at this, could have looked at that. I could have made it better than what it is.
Usually I get that from people who write in comments to the review going, well, why didn't you talk about this? And I go, yeah, I probably should have, huh? Oh, well. It's one of those things that you just can't think of everything every time.
Right.
So if you're looking to become a Mac writer, we're always looking for new talent. Obviously, we have a very large staff at this point. I mean, when you start looking at all the active contributors at MyMac.com, that's a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
There's always room for new people.
Yeah.
You know, send us an email at tim@mymac.com if you're interested. Let me know your idea.
Mm-hmm. And, or give us a call on our Skype.
The Skype's really for comments for this show. So, you know, go ahead and give them the phone number, because quite honestly, not a lot of people seem to call this number. I don't know why. It's easy to do.
It's 1-801-938-5559. That's our Skype comment line.
We're still looking. And by the way, our Skype username is mymac.com. So if you're a Skype user, and if you go to mymac.com and Skype, that's our username.
Yep.
You can leave us a message that way as well.
Mm-hmm.
I got a little gas thing going here.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Mountain Dew.
Mountain Dew, baby. We're still looking for your horror stories for tech support.
Yeah.
You know, did you have to go through hell to get help with your computer or your iPod or your Creative Zen? You know.
Or your Dell.
Or your Dell. No, I have a Dell in my house, so I can't really say anything. Yeah, you know, send us your comments. We'd like to know what happened to your and to your technology, how it broke, and what the company did or didn't do to fix it.
Yep.
And then we'll call them on the show. No, we won't do that. That would be fun, though, wouldn't it?
Could be.
Could be fun. We need to try to get an interview with Steve Jobs one of these days.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'd like to do. That was a fun interview with Guy Kawasaki. He's such an important figure in Apple history and Macintosh history.
And we really appreciate him taking the time out of his busy schedule to talk to us.
Yeah, I mean, somebody that does as many things as he does to be able to put a half hour aside just to talk to two schmucks like us.
That's right.
Always appreciated on our part. So I will actually put a link on the show notes for podcast number 90 directly to his blog. It's a blog that you're going to want to link or bookmark and visit often, because I get a lot out of it. It's really good. It makes me
want.
He has
a lot of great business tips. He has a lot of great book
reviews. Makes me feel like a loser that I've been doing MyMac.com for near 12 years and I'm still not making any money off this thing. And yet, last month we had 2.7 million people visit the site. And I'm not making any money.
I know.
Help me, Guy Kawasaki. How do I make money? Go to his blog and read, and maybe I'll find out that way.
There you go.
I'm just not a salesman. That's the problem. I can cultivate talent.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know how to make
it.
I can't sell it.
Yeah.
And I'm not a salesman. Mm-hmm. I don't pretend to be. So that's the show this week. We're going to be back next week. Remember, if you're missing the segments, they're going to be out Friday. Unless something happens catastrophic and I can't get it out that quick, then it'll come out next Monday.
Yeah.
But most likely it's going to be this Friday. It's going to be called the MyMac Mini Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Mini doesn't mean it's any smaller or less important than this show, because it's just as important as this show. Mm-hmm. And it's probably going to be more entertaining, because it won't be Chad and I ignorantly speaking back and forth the whole time.
This is true.
So we said it was going to be a smaller podcast, and here we are up at, 50 minutes already. And
we're the only ones talking.
And la, 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 la. And I still like cookies. So.
As if we can.
When you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Damn you, Internet!
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.